When Dante stumbled out of the inferno, he saw some of the beautiful things heaven bears. That line is the title of a new book by Ethiopian-born author Dinau Mengistu. He follows the lives of African immigrants who've escaped from the hell of their own countries and are beginning to give up on dreams of finding paradise here in America. Mengistu sets his tale in Washington, D.C.'s Logan Circle neighborhood, where gentrification has caused wrenching change over the past decade. The roar of new construction is still a constant feature of Logan Circle, as I discovered when I met Dinau Mengistu there under the big bronze statue of the Civil War General John Logan. Can you tell us first off the link between Africa and Logan Circle? Your main character comes from Ethiopia.
He comes from Ethiopia when he's about 17 years old after leaving the revolution that killed his father. And when he moves to D.C., he ends up deciding to settle in Logan Circle because at that time the neighborhood's still predominantly poor and predominantly African-American. And he has the idea that he can come to a place like Logan Circle and just kind of quietly vanish into the backdrop and doesn't have to live up to all the kind of ideals and expectations of being an immigrant. And here he finds himself just able to open up a small little grocery store, live really quietly, and he deliberately doesn't want to do any more harm or damage to the world, and he sees this as a place where he can do that.
What drew you to Logan Circle as the neighborhood to set your story?
It was when I was living in D.C. when I was in college, and my girlfriend at the time was living in Logan Circle, and the neighborhood then was so radically different. It was both elegant and beautiful, and at the same time really damaged, and you could see an enormous amount of prostitution and poverty, and at the same time so much splendor inside of the houses. And then over the years you could see it change, and it changed so quickly and so rapidly that when I began to write the book, it just seemed utterly inevitable, because that process of change was already fascinating. And with the character himself, because he leaves Ethiopia and his friends are all also immigrants, all leaving Africa as well, I liked the idea of double displacement, the displacement that they end up having and the kind of displacement that comes when a neighborhood like Logan Circle changes so rapidly.
How much of your life is reflected in the life of your main character, Sefa Stefanos?
It's a bit of a mix. He leaves Ethiopia as a young man, and I left, of course, as a baby. And so most of what happens to him inside of Ethiopia is are pieces of stories that I've heard from my family. So the death of his father is kind of my imagined version of the death of my uncle during the revolution. And when Sefa leaves Ethiopia, he becomes a refugee inside of Sudan, which is a story very similar to the one my uncle went through. His life in D.C. bears a little bit more similarity to my own. It's the walks he takes around the city are very much the walks I used to take and that I still take from time to time.
Sefa has two friends, two close friends, that are also immigrants from Africa, Joseph from the Congo and Kenneth from Kenya. And they have this bitter little game that they play when they get together.
Yeah, they sit in the store in the evenings, and whenever there's an awkward moment or silence between them, one of the characters will yell out the name of a dictator or a revolutionary leader, and it becomes the responsibility of the other two to guess the year of the revolution that the dictator was responsible for and also the country in which it occurred. So somebody will say Bukasa, and then they have to guess that it was Central African Republic in 1967. And the game is dark and it's funny at times, and it's also their way of kind of expressing their frustration at Africa and all of the political leaders who have done such a terrible job and have ruined the country. So it's a way of them negotiating that anger, and it's also a way of keeping themselves connected.
You get this real sense of isolation, that even though they're here and they live in this very bustling place, and he describes in detail, you know, people on buses, people in the metro, you still get the sense that Sefa is very alone.
Yeah, and the observations come because he's alone. He's removed himself so far from kind of normal social conventions that what he does have, I think, in turn, is a really kind of attentive eye. And so he spends a lot of time walking, and he notices and he sees things as deeply as he possibly can, partly, I think, because he's not connected to any environment or world. So what he can do is just observe, because he's so far outside of life.
You know, he starts to almost come out of his shell, so to speak, when a new neighbor moves into Logan Circle. Her name is Judith. And she sort of symbolizes change for the neighborhood.
And she also, Judith has a daughter, and she is definitely part of the first wave of gentrification that's moving into Logan Circle, and that's where, you know, Judith buys a home and she refurbishes it and makes it into something beautiful. And Saifa becomes very attached to both her and her daughter, and that does. It starts bringing him back to life. It makes him, for the first time, he feels like he could potentially have a family, that he could have a sense of intimacy and connection with, you know, he's never had it really before, and now he sees the potential, especially with Judith's daughter, Naomi, who gives him a real opportunity to almost become a father, both for Naomi, who's missing one, and also, you know, in honor of his own father, who's dead.
They spend a lot of time in his store reading books. Books that you wouldn't think an 11-year-old would read.
She's definitely very precocious, but hopefully the idea with her picking out such large books, they read The Brothers K together, and she's 11 years old, and you know, no right 11-year-old is ever going to read The Brothers K.
And Brothers K is Brothers Karamazov?
The Brothers Karamazov by Dostoevsky. What she wants is a big book. She wants a big book that will keep him reading to her, because she doesn't want to let him go. She wants to keep him. And he loves her for that. He wants that. He makes it, makes him feel even better.
There is this lovely passage in your book where Saifa is talking about how he loves P Street that comes off of Logan Circle here. He describes men walking with matching dogs and how the farther up P you move, the better life gets. You wrote, "It only grows prettier and wider with the houses increasingly grand and luxurious, as if each step forward were a step toward paradise." Is this a metaphor in some way for the lives of these African exiles?
It is. It's a metaphor definitely for the idea that they can come and their lives can actually, you know, the further along you're supposed to move, the better and more affluent and prettier and greater and grander life is supposed to become. So as the narrator heads out of Logan Circle and heads towards and starts walking up towards P Street, it is this walking forward into a brighter and greater future, in the same way also that it has its parallels with the Inferno as well, and Dante's kind of own trajectory and progression out of heaven into hell, or out of hell into heaven.
The three friends have a very intimate relationship. I'd like for you to read for us, if you would, from a part of the book where Saifa is talking about how Joe from the Congo seems to be somewhat obsessed with literature. Can you read for us?
Sure. "Through a round aperture I saw appear some of the beautiful things that heaven bears, where we came forth and once more saw the stars. When he's drunk, Joseph likes to declare those to be the most perfect lines of poetry ever written. Think about it, he says. Dante is finally coming out of hell, and that is what he sees. Some of the beautiful things that heaven bears. It's perfect, I tell you. Simply perfect. I told my teacher that no one could understand that line like an African, because that is what we live through. Hell every day with only glimpses of heaven in between. There is hardly a single thing in Joseph's life, though, that hadn't become a metaphor for Africa. From great lines of poetry to the angle of falling light on a spring afternoon, he saw flashes of the continent wherever he went. Kenneth hated him for this. If you miss it so much, he yelled at Joseph once, why don't you go back? Then you don't have to say every day, this is like Africa, that is like Africa. You can't go back, though. You would rather miss it comfortably from here instead of hating it every day from there."
You get the real sense that these men are really torn between the past and their lives here in the United States.
Yeah, it's this frustration and kind of never-ending tension for them, where it's, you know, Kenneth, for one, has made a pretty successful life here in America. He has a job as an engineer. He makes a lot of money. He has a Saab, but yet he still comes home to his apartment every night by himself and kind of drinks alone. And at one point, Saifa walks in and finds him just sitting there drunk talking to himself. Joseph has all of the aspirations and ideals of becoming a poet, but is still a waiter after 17 years at a restaurant. And, you know, they still have their dreams, and some of them, you know, like Kenneth, have kind of made more of themselves, but there's still this unsettledness that they all have inside of themselves. They're not comfortably at home in America, but nor, as Kenneth points out to Joseph, are they necessarily able to go back to their countries.
As a man of a younger generation, but also an immigrant from Ethiopia, do you have that same tension in your life?
I do. It's kind of a more, you know, the characters in the book kind of magnified a little bit more, but having left Ethiopia at such a young age, it's, growing up here, it was always this idea that there's this country that I belong to, and that is an enormous part of my identity and my cultural identity as well. But here in America, of course, then you're just supposed to be American. But yet you don't feel like you can totally fit into American life. And at the same time, and I've been back to Ethiopia, and it's wonderful, and it's great, but it's also, I haven't been there in 25 years.
You were 2 when you left.
I was 2 when I left, and I didn't go back until I was 27. So within all those years, you can still go back and you can embrace your country, but there's still inevitably a divide. My language skills are pretty terrible. But at the same time, when I'm here in America, I'm obviously very comfortable, and this is very much, the cultural landscape that I know intimately. But you also still remember feeling that maybe this isn't entirely all of who you are.
Well, thank you for talking with us and giving us our tour of Logan Circle.
It was a pleasure.
Dinao Mengistu's new novel is The Beautiful Things That Heaven Bears. You can read an excerpt on our website, npr.org.